Okay. You guys ready to talk some soccer?
I think
so. All right, we're here to talk some soccer. Welcome into the Orlando Soccer Show post-game show. My name is Austin David. Gavin Eubank is here for the first time. And
finally.
Yeah, 4 months.
It's 4 months, yeah.
Got to stop being lazy.
It's a long drive, you know what I'm saying?
Mike Ramajo is also here, too. We're on Periscope, we're on Facebook Live, and we're recording for your consumption later on as a podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and all that other stuff. So, let's talk about what we just saw, which was more of the same. It was
a soccer game, much we can say.
It was a soccer game, but it was just, it follows the narrative of Orlando City home openers, which is late equalizers. Mm-hmm. 3 of the first 4 years of MLS have consisted of 90-plus minute equalizers. And it's just, it's wild how it keeps happening like this. And despite adversity, despite all the stuff that happened leading up into this match, it's still, it finished the same way we kind of expected. And at the same time, it was completely unexpected. And that's kind of the beauty of this game and soccer in general. It keeps you on your toes, and well, it makes you really happy at the end of it. Even though it wasn't a win, it felt like a win.
Right, and I think like as the game kind of wore on, and more Orlando City was they're playing down a man, and they kept pressuring in that second half. It just kind of felt like it wasn't going to go their way, but at the same time, I didn't feel like they were going to lose this one. And then especially as you got in those final 10 minutes, it kind of, you could feel that something was going to happen that was going to bring this game back to level, if not, you know, 2 goals to go ahead. And ultimately, they got the result that they probably didn't want at the beginning of the day,
mm-hmm.
but that's a result, considering what happened in the first half, that they're going to settle with and be pretty happy with.
Right. I mean, you know, obviously my thoughts is, yeah, we didn't see a full-strength Orlando City squad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously there's going to be fans that are going to say that's an excuse, but it's the truth. I mean, we didn't see a full strength. There was just a plethora of players that were just out because of injury. But you kind of saw the squad, and I mean, for some reason, I have to point out, I mean, Justin Merrin was just probably the man of the match.
He was absolutely unbelievable. And it's amazing because when you look at how this team has played without him, it's amazing that they didn't have a player like him to begin with, because he changed the complexity of the game entirely. And the chances he created and the movement that he had off and on the ball, the touch that he had, it really changed the complexity of the game and the offense for Orlando, and really kept the chances being created in the second half.
And he was asked post game whether he kind of took matters into his own hands, mm-hmm. or was he kind of told to kind of play that type of role, because he was playing really as a distributor,
like a number 10.
Mm-hmm. And you look at it too, I mean, who's your other number 10? Sacha Kljestan, he was actually not playing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had Yoshi Yotun, who was originally put as a number 10, but it just seems like he was more naturally shifting to the left or to the right.
Yeah.
And Justin Merrin was just pretty much all over that final third, whether it's the right side, the left, or in the middle. And it paid dividends to it towards the end, because obviously Jonathan Spector got that assist for that game tying goal from Stefano Pino. But that play was all Justin Merrin. I mean, 100%. That was a slick pass, and I think that's something that probably deserves so much credit, because obviously with the way the game went, video review kind of looked like it was going to impact the game for Orlando City. But obviously, you know, when you have a play like that, that kind of just, it's huge, because it salvages points and you're still, you know, you start the season technically on a good start.
Yeah, so let's go back and talk about those.
And I just want to say, too, on that, you know, you think about what he did out here tonight, just imagine in a couple of weeks when he's got Sacha Kljestan and Dom Dwyer in the lineup, mm-hmm. with him, two MLS first-team caliber players. I mean, 4 chances created, that's the most in the game so far, 86% passing on 61 passes. Like you said, he was everywhere on and off the ball. You pay $1 million in allocation for a guy, this is what you expect to get,
yeah.
And they certainly got it tonight.
And actually, just piggybacking off that before we switch to the next topic, and that's something actually that Justin Merrin spoke a lot about during the preseason. When he was asked about whether he knows he has to perform at a higher level this season, he said, well, they kind of traded a lot, they paid a lot of money to kind of get me here.
Yeah.
So there's automatic pressure technically there to kind of perform at a high level. And just another last thing, Justin Merrin said that, you know, he, as a veteran of this league, he felt like it was just his responsibility to kind of put the team on his back. And obviously that's really what happened. And obviously, we haven't seen a full-strength Orlando City squad just yet, so I'm pretty curious to see how that type of squad will look like heading into, as the season progresses.
Yeah, 100%. So, again, this is just a taste of what you're going to be getting. Like, a little taste because of how much they're missing still. You know, as the season progresses, there's 33 more games to go. You're going to see a lot more chances created, a lot more goals finished. And I think tonight was the biggest thing, was just finishing off chances that were created. Like, we can't really argue that chances weren't created. It's just nobody was getting heads on the crosses. No one was getting good looks at the shot. And you got to credit DC United for that. I think they came out, especially in the second half, they sunk back into a defensive shell. And it makes things a lot harder. Despite being up a man, I found it interesting that they just sunk back and played for that 1-0 win. And that's typically what you want to try and do on the road. But up a man, it was a different strategy because, you know, you're ahead on the scoreboard and on players on the field. So it's something interesting to think about. Would Ben Olsen, if he had been on the bench for DC, would he have taken that same approach to how they played the rest of the game?
It seemed like they kind of just took the back seat and didn't really focus on controlling the game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, there was one play where it seemed like Darren Maddox was off to the races, was about to score, hit Orlando on that counter, and Mohamed Elmanir with that recovery run just to deny Maddox from doubling the lead. That was huge, and that saved Orlando City from potentially losing the game. Obviously, they already had the two video reviews kind of go against them, and now you have someone like Darren Maddox, who's really lethal in that final third, close to doubling the lead, and you have Elmanir coming running back. And Marino said that's pure determination, someone that kind of takes, that literally puts their body on the line for the team. So definitely a collective effort for Orlando City, despite being, you know, playing for 10 men for almost 50 minutes.
Yeah, 100% of that.
And you talk about the way that this team was put together over the offseason. What, 14 new faces, the most roster turnover of any team in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And Jason said tonight was a great first example of what's to come. And I think he's absolutely right, because when you look at the guys that were out, with Coleman, Dyer, Sasha, Rossell, even, you know, Christian Aguita, there's so much more to be put into this team. And what we got tonight was a great effort out there from everybody who is playing for starting minutes. Just because that those guys are out doesn't mean that they're not going to get a chance to play.
Right.
Doesn't mean we're not going to see more Chris Mueller coming up. We're not going to see more Cam Lindley coming up, or more PC, even though he's going to be suspended. Obviously,
we'll talk about that.
Right, and you know, these guys have that opportunity, and they came out here and they absolutely worked their butts off to at least try to earn more minutes going forward.
Right, so let's kind of take this step by step, because there's three things that I want to talk about. So first off, the VAR reviews, because that was a very contentious moments in the game. First was the handball on Will Johnson. Now,
quote unquote.
Yeah,
handball.
So. First off, I want to ask, Mike, you are the pool reporter for Orlando City, and you sent in questions to referee Fotis Bazakos.
Legally this time.
Legally. to Fotis Bazakos, and asked him what his opinions were on the contentious calls. What did he happen to say about the handball?
Well, I mean, both questions that we submitted as the media pool, he kept it very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
First question was regarding the handball on Will Johnson. He just said it was a handball. You know,
love the description that he
really
gives.
Didn't really elaborate any more on that. And then the second question was regarding the second video review regarding Victor PC Giro's red card.
Mm-hmm.
It eventually led to Orlando City playing with 10 men. He just said it was violent conduct. Obviously, Jason Christ said while he was speaking, mm-hmm. I was speaking to the referee. Jason Christ said at the same time that it seemed like the foul was on PC, because it was an aerial challenge, and obviously it seemed like PC was kind of losing his balance, and obviously accidentally his arm kind of flailed at Yamil Assad's face. But obviously it cost Orlando City playing with a down a man, so it is what it is. It tends to happen a lot to Orlando. But obviously they overcame that obstacle and circumstance, and they were able to salvage a draw, which to me, in my books, that's a positive result at the end of the day. And even if they would have lost, I think to myself, I don't think it would have been that bad, because Orlando City I think, outplayed DC United.
Especially in the second half.
In the second half when they were trailing 1-0. Regardless of the result, whether they lost or drew or won, it was a really positive performance from Orlando City.
Mm-hmm.
And I think fans need to really look at that. The product on the field is not a finished product just yet. It's going to take some time, unfortunately. So.
And it's funny because we've seen this kind of performance before. Remember last year at the Chicago game, they go down 2 men and they still get a draw out of that. And I think it's the character of Orlando City. Yeah, there will be times that you'll kind of see during the summer when maybe the team's lagging and the heat gets to them that the performances look like they're a lot they're weaker, they're not as much, but. This out here is what you get. And I think one thing that stuck out to me today as I was thinking about it, when Jason says, all around, regardless of what the result would have been, I would have been proud of my team. He says that just about every single game because the team gives that effort every day. And that clearly sticks out to him, and he's able to say that every time because that's the fact.
Now we have a quick question here, actually, from a fan.
Yeah, I noticed the smirk on your face, so I'm interested to see where this one's going.
So, Brad Newton, our good friend,
he
asked, which one is the better draw, the 9-man Chicago or this one?
I didn't see the Chicago game, so I can't really give a...
You didn't see that one last year?
Last year. Today.
Yeah, so, like...
Hold on, New England played with 9 men today. Okay, we're talking about last year.
Last year. which one was a better draw? That one where they were down 2 men but still held on to the 0-0 draw, or this one where they scored late.
This one, because they outplayed DC United today.
Yep.
And for most of the game, it didn't seem like Orlando was playing with 10 players. If you look at last year, Orlando was defending most of that. They were parking 100%. That bus.
Yeah. Oh
and
yeah.
And Jason I even remember it too. Jason said, "When you're down 9 players, you really can't attack anymore." So
right.
I think that game you kind of see an Orlando City squad cornered, and in this game particularly, Orlando really wasn't cornered at all. So
yeah, they were on the front foot. I think when it comes to performances, I think the Chicago game it stands out a bit more because of the circumstances, because they were sitting back and they had to defend so much. I think that's a better result because of the factors that went into that.
Mm-hmm. Especially, you think, not just one red card, but 2 red cards, right. What that does to morale on
and
the
it's,
field
it's
at
not,
that point.
It's not even just that. It's the numbers that Chicago was pushing forward. Like, they were on the front foot pushing for that equalizer.
They finished with, what, like 20 shots in that game?
Yeah. So you got to – I feel you got to say that Chicago was the better result because of the factors considered, but this was the better performance – with all things considered.
I mean, you look at this too, 60% possession for the entire match. They had 82% of their passing accuracy. They had over 150, 140 more passes than DC United. They had less shots, but they also had less shots on goal. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all around, the numbers tend to go in their favor as well, especially, if you look at those stats, you would never know Orlando City was down a man for a majority of the game.
Not at all. So let's talk a little bit about the rookies. Cam Lindley, Chris Mueller, both played a hefty amount of minutes. They've been playing with the starters pretty much through the entire preseason. I expect them both to start. The only thing that out of the starting lineup I don't think any of us predicted was PC in the midfield. And, he won't be playing next week because he'll be suspended. But let's talk about Lindley and Mueller. What did you guys think of their performances? Mueller up top and then Lindley in that number 6 role.
I think Mueller continued the trend of what he was kind of building in preseason, of that narrative that he's a guy that you can count on. He's a guy that clearly here earned his starting spot out there tonight, and I think he had some good chances. He had, 3 shots on goal, or he had 3 shots, one of them on target.
Mm-hmm.
He was all over the place, especially Cam Lindley. Cam Lindley was everywhere in that first half. You look at his map and he was all over the field. He was connecting on a lot of his passes. And you really can't ask for much more out of two guys making their MLS debuts when
they're 20 and 21
right,
years
these
old.
These new guys that have never played out here in front of a crowd like this before, it's certainly a lot of pressure. And in a moment like that, I'm sure it's easy to get emotions get the best of you. But they grabbed their opportunity, and I guarantee we're going to see a lot more of them coming down the road.
I actually agree. They pretty much, I think they did pretty well for their first ever MLS game. Kim Lindley did a really good job pretty much holding down that mid and kind of linking with Yoshi or just linking back with the center backs. I mean, you think about it, you're a rookie, your first game, there has to be some jitters, but he was very calm and cool and very collected. Chris Mueller, too, I mean, he had a really good first touch in the first half. I don't remember. Yoshioto whipped the ball into the box, and Mueller was able to kind of control that ball. I mean, that's not easy. I mean, you see a lot of forwards in this league that kind of squander those type of balls. But obviously, yeah, I mean, you look at Mueller, he had, what, two, three chances, and it kind of didn't go his way. And they were from close range. But, you know, I asked Justin Miram post-game regarding that, and, you know, he said that's just part of being a rookie. You kind of grow as each game goes by. You know, nothing's really a success until you kind of grasp it. So I think it's just a matter of time until Mueller kind of starts grasping the type of responsibility that's going to be looked on him in that final third, because he had a phenomenal preseason. I'm pretty sure there's going to be expectations on him to kind of deliver for mm-hmm. the squad.
Right. He had that chance in the 51st minute, too, from, you know, 10 yards out of the goalkeeper. And he just knocks it wide.
A bit wide and hit it on the back.
I like to think that maybe the absence of Sacha Kljestan probably kind of played a little bit of a part in that, because most of his goals in preseason, the first amount
they were
of
all
goals,
set up by Sacha.
Sacha,
they?
So yeah. There is that relationship and there's that link. I mean, you and me were at training just a week ago, earlier this week, and mm-hmm. you see Chris Mueller walking off the training pitch with Sacha Kljestan. They were talking. Who knows what they were talking about? Mm-hmm. But obviously, if there's that relationship off the pitch, just imagine on the pitch. There has to be some chemistry there. And we're talking about a veteran MLS player, veteran soccer player in general, and a rookie. You know, you can get so much advice from that and kind of learn from it.
Yeah. So with Mueller and Lindley, I think the biggest thing to take away from their performances is they didn't shy away from trying to make the big plays. You know, with Lindley being in that number six role, it's easy just to pass back into the defense, play it safe, don't try anything going forward. But with Lindley, he was ballsy. I mean, he was threading in passes between 3-4 defenders, and sometimes it didn't work. And with some young players, sometimes they say, okay, well, maybe I should just play it safe, don't want to make my coach mad or anything like that. But with Lindley, I think one of the main points of why he was starting in the first place is because he's not afraid to take those chances. He's not afraid to go forward, try and get the ball into space, whether it's dribbling into space himself or passing into space. He has great vision, and if you go back and run some of the film back on his performance tonight, you'll see some of the passes that he made were incredible. And I don't think Christian Higuita could make some of those passes.
No.
In that role, right, last year, I don't think Higuita makes those kind of passes. And right, I think that's what Jason Christ likes compared to Higuita in Lindley, right? Higuita is more of a destroyer in the midfield. He's the one who stops the ball from going forward. But I think what Jason Christ likes, and especially in that diamond, is a player at that number six role that can distribute, that has right, the
how many
confidence
times do you see a guy making his MLS debut with 55 passes?
Right. Well, I mean, in playing in that role, that you have to be able to make those passes.
Right.
So that's a big factor for him going forward, and being able to play confidently. And going back to this, even after the foul that he committed, which led to the goal from Yamil Assad, right? That was the yellow card that he got, which led to the goal. Mm-hmm. Even after that, he was still playing confidently. He was still trying to thread passes through. And I think that speaks volumes to his character, just about how he can play through adversity. And Jason Christ talks about this all the time, how he sees reactions from his players. And I think, especially from the rookies, you saw a really good reaction tonight after going down a goal.
Of course.
So with that, I think we should talk about Justin Miram. We touched on him a little bit, but I mean, God damn, was he good.
Yeah.
I mean, really good. And it's incredible to watch him, just the subtle touches that he makes to get past defenders. It opens space up for other players, because you saw 2-3 defenders running at Miram to try and stop him, which then allowed Munir to go overlap on the outside. Or it allowed Scott Sutter or RJ Allen at the end of the game to overlap on the other side. And he had the vision to pick them out across the field.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, but he wasn't afraid to take shots from outside the 18, which we hadn't seen very often. How many times?
Well, we've seen Carlos Rivas take shots outside the 18. Like,
he was very inaccurate, though.
Right.
He was.
He took shots just to take shots.
Right. He was never short on confidence. He was short on everything else.
Right.
But having a player that can be able to do all of those things. Yeah, Kaká playing in that role last year and even the 2 years before that, he didn't have what he used to have. And it was very evident right. tonight watching Justin Muren play that's the kind of player they wanted Kaká to be.
I think there was 2015 Kaká, and then there was the Kaká for that, and I think mm-hmm. this was more reminiscent of the kind of player that Kaká was in 2015. Like you said, he sees what's happening on the field, and he's really one of the only guys out there that can really see that and try to make something happen with it. You know, and they've had creators like Kevin Molino and Matias Perez Garcia, but those guys don't quite live up to that. They're talented players, but they don't have the field vision and the awareness like a guy like Justin Miram has. And I think that, you know, when you look at what Orlando City gave up to get him, right now it's shown that it's worth it. And like I said earlier, when you get a Sasha Kljestan back, when you get a Dom Dwyer back, those guys that they make the runs and they just all click together and they know when they get connected where they're going to be at every given moment, it's going to be real dangerous when those four guys start hooking up out there with Yoshi out there as well. It's going to be something special, and I think that this is just the glimpse of what it's going to be.
And I think a lot of the talk during preseason was that this is great on paper. It looks fantastic, right. but we don't know how it's going to turn out.
Right.
And
we didn't get to see anything in preseason.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing.
Little glimpses. But I think even after tonight, and I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but adding in Sasha Kljestan, like you talked about, I mean, this could very easily be a playoff-caliber team. And I think if they don't make the playoffs, then this is
And that's the thing, is how many times have we sat here in February and March for Orlando City and said, I think we have a playoff team in front of us, and then it all just falls apart in the middle of the summer.
Mm.
Now, again, this team is different than those teams. It's more talented than those teams, and it's certainly deeper than those teams everybody's healthy.
We said that last year, too.
But when you look back at every year, we say that, but every year the team that we're looking at right now is better than that team. But at the same time, like you
they
said,
finished second to last year.
On paper, yes. But when we sit here in February and March and we say this is definitely a playoff team, we're looking at a better team than we did last year. It's just all a matter of it coming together.
Right.
The last few years it hasn't, for various reasons, and you know, we could spend all day talking about what
it's
went wrong in every year.
The outside factors.
Right. Like, you know, I mean, they got off the last year, they got off to an amazing start, and I think that was the team that they should have been. But then they hit a wall, and they fell, and they tripped over, and it was like they were in the middle of a stampede, and they just couldn't get back up because they were just getting trampled every week out there. And
it's hard to pull it back when you consistently lose like that, and everything goes wrong.
Right.
Mentally, it's really hard to come back from that.
Yeah, and
you saw it.
Yeah, right. And if there's one thing they've got going for them, it's 8 of their first 12 matches this year at home. So they have that opportunity to get off to a good start, build confidence, get the ball rolling.
Again,
before you get into those summer months where your legs are starting to tire out, the heat's starting to pick up here in Florida, and you start to have to do a little bit more travel here and there across the country. I think they have a road trip at one point where it's like they start here in Florida, they go out to Vancouver, they come across to like Montreal, and you know those kind of trips are going to be tough on the team. So it's getting the points now, and if this is the performance we're going to see when the team's not healthy, then I'm excited to see what's going to happen when they are healthy and they have their five key players back out there.
Now, you got to remember that Yoshi Otun will miss parts of the summer due to the World Cup.
Right. And I think that's where the depth comes in, and when you see a player like Cam Lindley is now able to kind of step up there and do that role, and then
well,
that helps make more confidence.
Well, that and also PC, because mind you, I mean, Yoshi played as the number 10, and that was also kind of unexpected when I saw that
right.
lineup. He's usually playing on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but you look at the cards you kind of dealt with, no Sacha, no Coleman, no Dwyer, no Yuri Rosell just yet.
Right.
I mean, I think pretty much Jason had to play with what he kind of had.
Yeah, and I think after this game, I think he got a little bit of a look of what he could do for the next game. Because I think Miram at the number 10 with Sasha still out is better
right.
than him playing as an out-and-out forward. I think if you throw Pino and Mueller up top, it gives you Pino, who's that big physical guy who can go up in the air and win headers.
Yeah.
And it also gives you that finesse guy with Mueller who can make runs into the box and play off of Pino in the
especially
box.
Especially next week against
right.
a Minnesota team
and
that's very shaky on defense.
Exactly. And you saw how good Pino was at the top of the box in distributing. Right? If he gets thrown in the number 10 role again and you have those two players up in front of him, I could see a few goals being scored at the least, especially against that shaky defense from Minnesota.
Of course.
But you mentioned with Yoshi's going to be out, and you look at that now, and you have a guy like Yuri Rosell that you could throw out there with a Cam Lindley and Christian Aguita. Those are three solid midfielders right there, along with Will Johnson. You have Justin Miram, Sasha Kljestan. I think the midfield is going to be set. Like I said, this team is deeper than it has been in the past. Sure, they don't have those. They don't have a lot of wingers out there, but they have a lot of good midfielders. That Jason Christ, he's not necessarily a wing kind of coach, but he plays where they pass and everybody's moving. And those guys fit into that. And if they can fit into his game plan and execute it, then that's really all they need, as long as they have the players there and, you know, everybody's healthy come this summer.
Yeah, you talk about how wide they were playing. And the 4-1-2-1-2 diamond, right, that's a very narrow formation, right? It's meant to be played within the midfield. But it looked like they were – I mean, how many crosses did they have in this game, Orlando City? Do you have the stats up there? Total crosses?
24 crosses.
That's a lot for a supposedly narrow formation.
Right.
You saw Chris Mueller
– they played heavy down the right side in that first half. And, Sutter and Merrim.
And that's the thing. The fullbacks overlapping. Munir and Sutter overlapped a lot more than they did last year with Toya and Sutter.
Well, Sutter did a lot. I think Toya was more defensive focused.
Right. And I think that's why Munir is in now rather than Toya, because they want more attacking play.
Consistency on both sides of the field.
Right. Because if you have one side that overlaps more than the other, defenses are going to start keying more onto that.
Right. Well, that's one of the things we talked about before the game, too, is you look back at last year, is once Scott Sutter was playing so well, once teams figured out how to shut down that right side of the field for Orlando City, that's kind of where they all went down, because they weren't able to effectively play down the right side anymore.
Well, I do have, I guess, somewhat of a hot take. I mean,
sound the alarms.
Well, no, I mean...
Let's hear it.
Omenir did play pretty well today, but there was certain times where he wasn't really consistent as a left back should be. I give him the benefit of the doubt. Yes, you know, this is your first game. There's just so much chemistry that needs to be formed on the pitch. But if obviously, I think that should sound an alarm at the same time, because if you're in June and you're still not reading those balls that are being played down that left flank, and you're not reading them very well, and you're not putting those balls into the boxes as a left back should. Donny Toya, man, I think that's the opportunity for him to kind of start finding a way to kind of wiggle into that starting 11. So I think in a way it's the team that played today shouldn't get too complacent right now.
I mean, Jason, the culture that he's created, no one's safe in their starting job. If somebody's outplaying you, you're going to get subbed out, and you're going to lose your job.
And he said that post game. Somebody asked him, so is the lineup going to be kind of fluid and there's going to be a lot of different faces every week? He said that's all dependent on performances and results.
Yeah,
if you play well, you're going to earn your minutes next week. There's no guaranteed starting spots, unless, of course, your name is Sasha Kljestan, Dom Dwyer. Unless you're playing really, really bad.
Right.
We've seen that he's not afraid to bench those guys like he did with Kyle Larin at points last year.
Mm-hmm.
He did it with Kaká.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's not afraid to put in the guys who are playing better just because they don't make as much money or they're not a big name. So it's certainly, we said it today, this was probably like one of the most difficult starting lineups to predict.
Mm-hmm.
Every week you don't know what Jason Christ is going to put out there.
Yeah. And I won't say one thing about Munir. Yes, he made mistakes. Yes, he didn't read runs. But when he made those mistakes, he had the speed and the ability to counteract those mistakes and fix them. Right.
Mm-hmm.
There were times where he was bombing forward and he lost the ball. He'd sprint right back and be there. At that play at the end where he stopped Darren Maddox, that was what, 78th minute? That was like towards the end of the game, and he was still sprinting full speed down the field. And that just shows the stamina that he has, but also in his ability that if he knows he makes a mistake, he has the ability to get back there and rectify it.
Right.
So I think that's important when we're talking about El Munir, just the fact that when he stops rectifying his mistakes and it costs Orlando goals, then I think we start talking about Donny Toya more. But we have to see a bigger sample size of what he has to produce before we can talk more about
And if there's one thing that Orlando City fans love most, it's the players that show that heart and hustle just like
that. Oh, yeah.
And that's a very good and easy way to win over a lot of supporters out there.
So let's, last thing we'll talk about, because we've been here, it's now midnight and I'm tired and I want to go.
I think we're all tired.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the fans, because this is the fourth year in a row that it's been a sellout on opening day. And this was an announced sellout, but this is one of those games where it was an actual sellout. Like, all the seats were filled. And this is a day where the Magic played. They had a barbecue event at Camping World Stadium.
Which I seriously considered skipping the game to go to, if I'm being honest.
And then they also had the Lion King over at the Bob Carr, or not the Bob Carr, the Dr. Phillips Center.
Yeah.
They also had a play at the Bob Carr as well. So there was no shortage of stuff going on in Orlando, but Orlando fans.
It's a good advertisement for Orlando, too. There's no shortage of things going on.
Exactly.
I like to think this. I never doubted that this city is a soccer city.
Mm-hmm.
I posted a tweet in January. I had like over 100 likes on Twitter. But it was one. Obviously, for those that don't know, I'm still a student at UCF. So whoever blows up my phone at Tuesday, matter of fact, at 10 a.m. asking questions about Orlando City. More than likely, I'm in class. I'll refer you to Austin or Jordan Culver, who were mostly at training on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But anyways,
and Gavin
when he gets out there. But regarding the city, though, I never had a doubt that this city's a soccer city. My personal testimony is waking up early in the morning, like at 6:30, to head to school. But I go to my neighborhood Starbucks, and the first thing my Starbucks barista kind of asks is, what's going on with Orlando City? I mean, I never really would have thought that I'll be talking soccer at 6:30 in the morning with people of Central Florida. So obviously it was a late crowd, but I think it's pretty cool. It kind of shows you that Kaká really, he did bring a lot to the city,
mm-hmm.
but I think there was questions whether, with Kaká gone, how is the team going to market itself? I think they kind of answered that tonight.
Yeah.
It's pretty chill here.
Yeah. I think with Kaká, the what he did for this club was that he got people interested in it. Right? People knew who he was, what he had done. He won awards, world-famous player. It got people to experience Orlando City for the first time. But now that Kaká's gone, they're hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're hooked into this culture, this club, and the players, like they come out and support regardless of who's playing for the team. They like the team itself, and I think that's important, especially for the future of Orlando soccer in general. Not just with Orlando City, but with Orlando Pride, with any of the youth development academies that are up and coming. With I know at least 4 different private academies that are opening up, private soccer academies that are recruiting kids from overseas to bring to Orlando, simply because they feel that this is the best and biggest growing market out of any city in the U.S.
I think we have a Facebook question.
Y'all still live. Oh, hey, Victor!
Victor Tan from New Day Reviews in Malaysia.
Is it like 8 a.m. in Malaysia?
They're 13 hours ahead, so obviously Victor's...
1 p.m.?
Yeah,
kind of shows the commitment also from the local journals here that, you know, we have a... Victor, who covers the team as well thoroughly, he's in Malaysia and he's still kind of following today's game. So, but yeah, no, it's great to see kind of the city kind of, you know, get around this club even after Kaká leaves. You kind of hit the nail in the coffin there. I think Kaká kind of got everybody hooked, and now people are just coming back for more. If now I think in return, Orlando City needs to kind of give Orlando the proper answer, which is
playoffs.
Right.
So,
I think there was a really popular thing going around the Orlando City Twitter and Facebook circles. Playoffs or Jordan, and that is the crying Jordan meme. So
I think it's unfair to do
it's
that.
It's a big year. If they don't make the playoffs this year, next year is going to be even rougher.
Playoffs or Jordan.
Well,
it's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's going to be it. We're pushing 35 minutes.
This is the content that we like.
Victor, we
bring,
miss you,
yeah,
too. Hope you're enjoying it over there. You missed a fun one. And, we'll have this podcast out tomorrow morning. If you missed any of it, you can listen it back. You can watch it back.
tomorrow morning being Sunday morning, if you're listening to this podcast.
It's already Sunday morning.
What is tomorrow morning, which would be today morning. So this morning, in a few hours.
Okay. Let's just stop thinking.
Well, we'll have a new show this upcoming week. So
hopefully with some special guests.
We have Minnesota United next week at Orlando City Stadium. So for those that kind of tuned in, we appreciate it. We have content all over the place. Austin with the Orlando Soccer Journal, Gavin with SBI Soccer, and I'll have some stuff on MLSsoccer.com. So definitely a lot of Orlando City reads for Sunday. If you have nothing to do, read. And we'll see you guys next week.
Adios.
See you later, guys. Good night.
Good night.
And one.